Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to our favorite edition of the Three Martini Lunch every week, the Friday edition. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, if folks can think back 12 months from right now, there were two stories that were kind of dominating the headlines. One was the uprising in Egypt, and with the indefinite detention of four U.S. election monitors, we have the latest on that story. The other one, of course, was the huge fight in the state of Wisconsin and eventually branching out to other states. But in Wisconsin, it was Governor Scott Walker trying to rein in huge state budget deficits by cutting spending. And the most controversial part, of course, was asking union members to contribute a little bit more to their health care benefits as well as their pensions and, of course, reining in collective bargaining. So in that time, the opponents tried to recall some state senators. They actually succeeded in a couple of accounts. And now that a year is up, they can legally go after Walker himself, as well as some other lawmakers who are part of that effort. And so that's not exactly the good news. The good news, though, is that in the early polls, Scott Walker is not only ahead of the idea of recalling him, and he would be running against a person, not just the idea of him not being there like it was in California, but he's ahead by outside the margin of error. He's at 50% to about 44% against the likes of Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett, who I think he actually ran against in 2010. And the old Democratic congressional curmudgeon David Obey is also losing to Walker in the early polls. But like we said, it's early and the unions will dump a ton of money in there. But right now, looks like the people of Wisconsin know what's good for them.
We always have that common joke whenever we say, oh, Obama's running very well against Obama's trailing very badly against generic Republican. And there is no candidate named Gene Eric Republican. you know, that you need somebody. It is not Scott Walker versus not Walker. It is Scott Walker versus somebody. And lo and behold, the somebodies the Democrats are putting forth have their own flaws, have their own problems, and have been rejected by the citizens of Wisconsin fairly recently. I guess Obey didn't get rejected, but he chose not to run for re-election. And yeah, obviously it's a little early, but Wisconsin has been very interesting in that the Democrats have made enormous efforts, and they tried the recalls against the state legislators, and they had their fugitive lawmakers fleeing across the state line, and it hasn't really seemed to work for them. And you know, one of the problems of the left's rhetoric on this is that when you enact some sort of tough reform that limits the power of public sector unions, the rhetoric is always that, you know, the sky will fall, that the earth will crash into the sun, and cats and dogs will live together, and it'll be, you know, apocalyptic. And then they enact it, and the apocalypse doesn't happen. And you know, for the vast majority of Wisconsinites, life goes on. And I remember during the Wisconsin protests, there was this observation that for public sector unions, look, life is going pretty good. They still have their benefits. Things are going well. For private sector unions, particularly the manufacturing industry, this has been a brutal recession and life is not easy. And so there's a certain sense of, wait a minute, why should we mobilize to help the folks who are doing okay if we're struggling? Why should the public sector be immune from the competitive pressures that we feel? So good news for Scott Walker. It's early. I don't want to get too confident about this. Still a long ways to go. But look, the common sense is still floating around in the water up there in Wisconsin.
Yes. Good to see. And hopefully it'll stay that way. But there will certainly be a ton of money injected into there. And if Walker can win, and if he wins by this margin, which is obviously optimistic at this point, it might bode well for the national ticket in the fall. We'll see. That's obviously a lot of speculation. But hey, we'll take it on a Friday. On to martini number two now, Jim. And if you believed every word that the president said in the State of the Union address on Tuesday night, you would think this economy is going gangbusters. And I remember you and I kind of mocking the old recovery summer of 2010. Well, it turns out that actually was the good old days, because that was 3% growth of the GDP in the year 2010. The new numbers out for the year 2011, 1.7. Way to drive us out of the ditch there, Mr. President. Jim, I'm not sure that this argument and this sunshiny fiction that he was spreading on Tuesday night is going to hold up over the next 10 months.
You know, I don't doubt we will hear from the Obama and his campaign something in the vein of, you know, X consecutive quarters of economic growth. But it's one of those things where, you know, I wonder how much Americans think about economics or how much these sort of things are just felt by them. Let's face it, you know, anything below 3% economic growth, it's not going to be backsliding. It's not going to be disastrous, but it certainly isn't going to feel like, you know, any type of significant recovery. And it's worth noting, you look back to, you know, the Reagan years when we came out of recession, you saw, you know, 7% economic growth, 8% economic growth quarter by quarter. I mean, it went, the economy was growing gangbusters. you can't apply that term at all. And so it's one of those things where pretty much, you know, since the Great Depression, when a recession came along, it was hard times. But then you usually got out of it fast, and you generally got out of it with a big rebound. And I think it's safe to say that we haven't really had an economy rebound. We've returned to growth, and because this is a podcast, you can't see me making air quotes when I say that. better to be in this 1%, 2%, 3% range. But for anything to feel like it's really significantly improving, it's going to take more than that. And it's going to be, I think, a very interesting test of this election is going to be, can Obama persuade people that something in the neighborhood of 2% growth is good? You know, that's good enough. As I joke, the Obama message in 2012 is going to be some variation of the Jack Nicholson line, this is as good as it gets. And, you know, if that is, Greg, we can close up shop. I mean, this is, you know, if this is as good as it gets, then America really is in big trouble because this is not particularly good at all.
And expect the line to be also, think about how bad it could have been, because he was just interviewed by Diane Sawyer on ABC last night about presiding over a nation where a record number of people are on food stamps. And of course, he blamed it on George W. Bush, because the increase in people being eligible for food stamps began under George W. Bush. Never mind the 3-year surge that's happened since, because if it's not good news, it's not on him. So, you know.
You know, I just observed, Greg, you think back to those moments of great leadership. I remember Churchill during the Blitz saying, well, it could be worse. Yeah. There's your rallying cry.
Yes, that's a great campaign slogan. On to Martini number 3 now. And if you were with us on Thursday, you may have noticed that we were lamenting the fact that this Republican campaign, at this point anyway, seems to be lacking even the dismal enthusiasm of the McCain and Dole campaigns, which obviously failed in 2008 and 1996, respectively. Well, right on cue, enter the enthusiasm of 88-year-old Robert J. Dole. He has sat on the sidelines long enough. He has decided that it is incumbent upon him to make sure that everyone knows that no matter what happens, Newt has to lose. He basically said that Newt was not a team player, constantly went around trying to pick fights with President Clinton, even though it wasn't necessarily good for his party, and essentially hinting that one of the major reasons he lost is because the Democrats constantly ran ads with him and Newt Gingrich in the ad, and of course Newt Gingrich was considered a pariah, and therefore Bob Dole's presidential campaign was doomed for that reason. I think it was doomed for a variety of reasons, Jim, not just that, if that was a major reason. But enter Bob Dole. I'm not sure that this is really going to be a huge factor, even though that the population of Florida tends to skew a little bit more towards his age.
Greg, you whippersnapper. Bob Dole knows that Bob Dole's loss in 1996 was not the fault of Bob Dole. It was the fault of Newt Gingrich. Dole is. You know it. I know it. The American people know it. I don't know about you, but as soon as I hear a statement from Bob Dole, I can only hear either Dan Aykroyd or
Norm Macdonald.
Norm Macdonald, exactly. You hear that voice in your head, just as George H.W. Bush became Dana Carvey after a while. first of all, if Mitt Romney needs to reassure the conservative base that he's one of them and he's not just some establishment long-time serving party loyalist who's just showing up and whose turn it is. Boy, nobody rebukes Gingrich like Bob Dole. That's the thing you throw out there that settles that one. A chunk of Dole's complaint is accurate. That yes, that as soon as Dole was the nominee, the Clinton campaign started running ads all over the place, tying him to Gingrich, which is very unpopular then. And Gingrich, really, even at the peak of his power, was never a particularly popular figure nationally. I remember saying yesterday that the moment this came out, my first thought was the response from the Gingrich campaign is like, look, there are 300 million Americans, of all the people to be telling a Republican how to beat an incumbent Democrat, the very last person who should be giving advice is Bob Dole, okay? considering his experience, et cetera, et cetera. And so the other thing which kind of jumped out at me about that statement is that, so Bob Dole laments that for every event that they did, Newt Gingrich kept walking around with an ice bucket. And Dole says that he had no idea what the heck this was about. It turned into kind of a joke yesterday of, you know, what's the ice bucket? What's with the ice bucket? What's he going to do? Greg, I might be the only person in the world who knows this, judging by that before the 94 revolution in Congress, for congressional offices, I guess they didn't have freezers or mini fridges or anything like that in the office. So they had ice service. They had an ice maker somewhere, and people would bring buckets of ice to congressional offices if they wanted ice in their drinks. And, you know, Newt Gingrich and the Republicans said, this is a ludicrous waste of money. I can't believe taxpayers pay to have people run around. If you want ice, go down to the ice machine and get it yourself. And so that's, you know, the ice bucket was a symbol of Congress giving up perks, being more careful with the taxpayer dollars, of trying to stop living like kings, etc. And I, you know, one, it just shows I'm an utter total geek who knows way too much about politics and political history. And also, but how does Bob Dole not know this? That's the other thing that I'm marveling. Like, did he not even ever ask Newt? Hey, so, Newt, what's with the bucket? Really? What's going on there?
Yes.
And it's still on his mind now, like something like we're now like close to 16 years later, right?
Yeah, we are 16 years later. So I don't know if Dole's angling for the VP slot. Might be a little bit of it. Might be a little bit of a stretch. But, you know.
Young, tanned, rested, and ready, Bob Dole. Omni Dole, 2012.
Yes, I believe all three of those characteristics still apply to Bob Dole, even though I haven't seen him in a while. Jim, have a great weekend. Enjoy the fact there are no debates or votes over the weekend. You can actually spend it with your family. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Who are those people? Hey, good looking forward to it.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us today. Have a great weekend, and join us again on Monday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.